here's May.
Good evening. This is May Brussel in Carmel, California. It's broadcast number 500, tape number 500, and it's July the 5th, 1981. Last week, I was talking about a two-part article series in the New York Times by Seymour Hersh on the Gaddafi connections in Libya to the CIA, to Frank Turpel, to George Theodore Shackley, and various members of the intelligence community, Edwin Wilson, and highest echelons of the CIA, and going into detail background and then detail of the operation of these people as being the nucleus of the assassination teams that have been set up by the Central Intelligence Agency from 1947 up to the present date. The two stories by Seymour Hersh are very important, and I'm going to continue with an analysis of those articles as much as time allows in a few minutes. But I do want to give you the list of names of some very important people. If you have a pencil handy, if you're used to writing them down, if not, you can write to me, and I'll mail you a list of these names. Names that you're going to see going back into the history books or in the future more about, and some were in the news this week. One is that Theodore G. Shackley, written up by Seymour Hersh. The other is Edwin Wilson, also in these articles. Frank Nugent, who was murdered January 27th, 1980. Michael Hand, and the Nugent Hand Bank that was named after those two men. Michael Hand is loose. He's at large, last seen in Rome with a lot of information in his head. He at least hasn't been murdered yet that we know of. Frank Turpel is now in Libya, hiding out away from the United States. George Corcola is in Europe. Turpel, as I mentioned last week, is ready to make a movie and reveal his role with the CIA. George Bush, John Connally, and Vernon Walters. You know those men. Their names are in the news all the time, and they go back to the first assassination teams in the continuous operation at the present time. William Colby, Michael Sindona, John Hinckley Sr., the Vanderbilt Resources that has not yet been exposed. You know the name Muhammad Ali Ajah, the man who shot the Pope. A very quiet over in Rome, but very important person like the Hinckley family. Mark David Chapman, who shot John Lennon. The Wells Fargo Bank, Kevin McCulloughy of the CIA, and Alexander Haig. Now, there are common denominators running through this list. There's 18 names, and there are common cities, operations, agencies, relationships, banking experiences that tie in a whole era of political assassinations and so-called terrorism of the left, which actually incorporates the radical groups that are the right-wing terrorists, and they've been funded by these persons and agencies for a long, long time. Adolf Hitler said at the Nuremberg Congress in September 1933, he talked about the way he could have been stopped by the anti-fascists, and he said, "The only one thing that could have broken our movement would be if the adversary had understood its principle from the very first day and had smashed with extreme brutality the nucleus of our new movement." If the adversary had understood the principle, and if ever there is a principle to understand, it is involved with these men that I have mentioned and the agencies that have funded them and the modus operandi that has kept them going, operating and being involved in assassination teams, and a lot of dirty tricks and mischief that is bringing the United States to a disgrace around the world. I'm very angry at the appointment that Haig pulled off Lefebvre this week. I never mentioned him when he was up for hearings before the Senate. I ignored him. The Senate turned him down for his human rights post. I figured there was enough news media coverage on him, and you could get that from the newspapers, and I like to cover the stories that you might not see in the smaller print in the back pages and tie them together. But when Lefebvre was sworn in this Wednesday by Alexander Haig as an expert on terrorism and counterterrorism and nuclear proliferation, it was just an outrageous slap at the people in the United States. He was turned down 13-4 by the Senate Foreign Relations Committee for his role on human rights and humanitarian affairs. He's a man who was promoting a product overseas that permitted at least 1 million children to be killed each year die, and he knew this was happening. He's a total fraud and fascist, rejected by his own family. His brothers pleaded with the Senate to turn him down. So being as he was turned down even by people like Howard Baker, who didn't trust him, Haig went ahead anyway and put him on terrorism and counterterrorism and nuclear proliferation. And it is the terrorism part of Haig that he needs in order to become president of the United States, in order to have a martial law to continue his coup d'etat. He was in the White House at one time with the tapes getting Nixon out of office, and he's there now waiting to take over. And as Hitler said, called the shots, if you could just understand these people and stop them, and they've gone so far already, and smash them with extreme brutality, you could stop their power. Now, Haig is identical to the methods used by Adolf Hitler. He's a protege of Fritz Kramer from Hitler's Nazi Germany, who put in Kissinger and Haig. Those were his two protégés, Kramer's protégés. And the way Hitler came into power was the propaganda of the menace of Bolshevism, and that's what brought the Nazis into full power. He kept talking about communism, and when he was the chancellor, February 27th, 1933, was the famous Reichstag fire, which he provoked as excuse to round up every critic, every radical. And I often refer to Haig as Reichstag Haig, that if he has to drop an atomic bomb on one of these cities, if he has to pass along some germ warfare, if he has to create a war in the Middle East with Mr. Theodore Shockley, one of the shocking parts of the Seymour Hersh article was a description by Mr. McCullough of the CIA, who worked with them, his family's in the CIA, how we were sending weapons and arms to not only to Gaddafi over in Libya, but the first training project that they were to do would be to blow up the oil wells, the Aramco oil wells of our allies in Saudi Arabia as a test case. Well, by blowing those up and blaming the leftists in the Middle East, Haig would have the war that he wants in the Middle East and would become automatically the commander-in-chief. That's the only motive you could have for Haig having money sent to Gaddafi to train people to blow up the oil that we use for our airplanes and boats and transportation and mail and for the normal functioning of our factories. The U.S. taxpayers are sending money over there to blow up the oil well so that our military can pull their Reichstag business. The fact that he put in this terrible Ernest Lefebvre into the terrorism part is outrageous, and I believe that, and I keep saying this almost every week, that if we don't go into the Hinckley family and the Bush and the John Connolly and the Haig connections to this military coup d'etat, the people that were behind the assassination attempt of Ronald Reagan, if we wait too long, they will in fact get their way. The way that the Third Reich world worked was to begin the Reichstag fire, and then as soon as Hitler was in, he could round up all of his opponents. And I refer, as I say, to Haig as the old Reichstag Haig. He had the training in the background, and that's what he's about. And I'm furious at his hiring Lefebvre and just thumbing his nose at the Congress, American people, by putting a piece of crap like that into a State Department salary. And he's turned down through all the hearings. They gave him every break they could, and he perjured himself. And then they say a few weeks later, well, here's $44,000. I'll use you in the terrorism, when it's the terrorism links of Alexander Haig that you have to watch very carefully. New York Times had an article, June 23rd, 1981, this was just a week ago, the Europeans link terror to the Arabs, but they disagree on the Soviet Union. And it goes into a lot of detail, a whole half a page. The Western European police, the intelligence, the political officials don't find Soviet terror in Europe or in around the Middle East. They refer to George Habash and the Popular Front that does work in Lebanon, Libya, and South Yemen, but they find that the Europeans are training in these areas as well as the so-called left. And the New York Times article says the right wing have used the government's inability to stamp out terrorism as their excuse in Spain to support authoritarian governments. That's exactly the Reichstag thing again. The right wing in Spain had used terrorism as an excuse to say, well, you need more authority. That's what Haig and Lefebvre want. This article goes into a careful analysis of the most violent terrorism is coming from the fascist group, and it refers to the Bologna, Italy bombing, where 80 people were killed and 200 were injured. August attack a year ago. And that again was listed and employed by Licio Gelli, who's now fled to Argentina, as a Nazi. He's always been a Nazi, but set off this bombing where 200 were hurt. And again, the Nazi group that were at the Munich Oktoberfest, where 11 people were killed and 200 people were injured. And the study of the intelligence agencies, people in Europe and America, said that the worst attacks were done by the right-wing terrorists, that they do fewer attacks, but there's more casualties. And this article goes into the fact that there is very little evidence that the Soviet Union is throwing out this kind of violence or terrorism, even though Alexander Haig's shtick that he keeps saying over and over again is that the Russians are doing it. The New York Times says that in February, operationally speaking, the Red Brigades and the Italian group are slowing down and there's not so much terrorism. That's because of since the first of the year, the list of the right-wing people that were funding the Red Brigades became known, and the story of the Italian government scandal broke the back of the current Italian government, and they shifted policies and changed governments drastically in the last several weeks. The New York Times article says, early this year, Secretary of State Alexander Haig said that the Soviet Union was following policies that helped support, foster, and expand terrorism. The CIA's analysts had difficulty marshaling evidence that would indicate that Moscow was responsible for this terrorism. And they ordered the United States government to rewrite a national intelligence estimate saying, in fact, that Haig is lying. Now, Haig will get support from Lefevre writing up any kind of thing he wants, but the New York Times said they had to rewrite these stories, and then they go into an example that even though the Soviet Union sells large amount of arms to Libya, knowing Libya is a major supporter of terrorist groups, there are also many pieces of evidence, the New York Times said, to support the fact that Libya's main source of funds to buy their weapons comes from Western nations who purchase Libyan oil. The Russians have their own oil. The United States and Great Britain buy Libyan oil, and with that money they buy weapons, not from Russia, but from the United States. And it was Theodore Shagley and Edmund Wilson and Frank Turpel and George Kerkola and the assassination teams going back through the entire era of the CIA who send Libya the weapons for the terrorism. That's the New York Times chastising Haig's remark and trying to put to rest some of the lies that are taking place. Now, in the book The Great Conspiracy by Albert Kahn and Sayers, they list the coups that took place as soon as Hitler was in power in Germany from 1933 to 1934. They described in their book a mysterious malaise that took care of the nations in the world. There were suddenly coup d'etats, there was sabotage, assassinations, revelations of cabals and conspiracies, and hardly a month passed from 1933 to 1934 that there wasn't treason and terror across Europe. And it goes into the Nazi German infection of different countries starting in January of 1934. And it refers to the French, the Cagoulards, the Iron Guard in Romania, the Croix de Feu in France, the British Union of Fascists. It lists about 12 or 14 countries and the crimes that took place as soon as Hitler was in office, the assassination of the secretary of the Soviet embassy in Poland, the assassination of the premier in Romania by the Iron Guards. These were all fascist attempts, an uprising in Paris in 1934 and attempted coup d'etat in Estonia, attempted coup d'etat in Bulgaria, attempted coup d'etat in the Baltic Brotherhood country, Latvia, the assassination of General Pieracki, a Polish minister of the interior. And there's a list of about 12 or 14 countries' attempted coups and murders that took place very quickly as soon as Adolf Hitler was in power. Well, if you take your newspapers from the time of the inauguration of Ronald Reagan, and that would be a good indication of violence taking place because you don't have to do too much history investigation to follow the 8 years of California violences of the same type when he was the governor. But starting with John Lennon, I've mentioned that, the murder of Lennon in December 8th of 1980, March 1981, 90 days after Reagan was in office, there was an attempted coup d'etat of Bush, Haig, and the Defense Department trying to take over the White House in the United States of America. In May, there was an attempted murder of the Pope with the links to Jelli and Lucio Jello and the fascist group going all the way from Spain to Argentina to Hitler's Franco, Peronist, Mussolini gang. Each one of these things I'm talking about has a common denominator. There was the murder of the president of Ecuador, Mr. Roldos, in May of 1981. May 31st, there was the murder of the president of Bangladesh. In each case, one was a liberal Democrat, the other was the only hope of the people in Bangladesh. There was the attempted murder of Mrs. Gandhi. Her airplane was damaged and was sabotaged. There was an attempted coup in February of the king and queen in Spain by the fascist government. In March, another murder plan for the king and queen of Spain was uncovered by the same interlocking group. In June last month, there was an attempted coup to stop the election in Greece, where Andreas Papandreou is running for the head of Greece right now. The election comes up soon, and they tried to stop that. In March of 1981, there was an attempted coup of the small island of Dominica for the Nazis, the organized crime, with high echelons of American officials involved. June 1st, 1981, the foreign minister of Morocco, the airplane almost crashed, and he survived. He was the man who was instrumental in setting up the arrangement of 52 hostages to come home. At first, they said there were no survivors. Major General Ahmed, A-H-M-E-D, was killed. A Bangladesh official was killed right after the president of Bangladesh. And then June the 7th, 1981, a Libyan-based assassination group was attempting to kill the president and his wife of the Philippines, the Marcos. Not that they're so perfect, but if they've been involved in past scandals or can't cover them up, such as Ronald Reagan or Pope John Paul II, they're expendable. That was called Operation June Bride, the plans to kill them in the Philippines. And there also had been $70 million sent out of the Philippines 2 months ago that I talked about on KLRB before that assassination attempt took place. So if you don't see a parallel between what happened when Hitler was in power and Nazi Germany and between Alexander Haig and Bush, George Bush, the former director of the CIA and now the vice president, with their interlocking links to the John Hinckley family in Houston, Dallas, and in Colorado, then you're going to have trouble seeing the news for the next years to come. If you can't believe that every one of those that I listed has been reported as a fascist attempt to overthrow those countries or a successful murder so far, and that's just 6 months that we've had, a little less than 6 months since Ronald Reagan was president. There was an article in February of the Washington Post, Richard Reeves, Reagan turns America away from the history of human rights. This was an article about that horrible Lefevre who just got on the payroll of the State Department. It was chewing him out for his having a dinner party and praising people in Argentine. The guest of honor was Willard Butcher, chairman of Chase Manhattan Bank. The quotations of Lefevre and Alexander Haig were disgusting, and they quoted Lefevre as saying, the human rights activist, Lefevre wrote, tend to underestimate the totalitarian threat to the West. People who think about human rights underestimate totalitarian West and the totalitarian temptation in the third world. They neglect or trivialize the fundamental political and moral struggle of our time, that we have to be preoccupied with the Soviet Union and nothing matters except that. You can torture, you can kill, you can brainwash, and you can take the repressions of Argentina and South Korea and wipe them off. Ernest Lefevre was written as a disaster by many columnists. And again, the old Reichstag Haig has to put him on the salary, and we have to pay his salary. Michael Harrington wrote in the New York Times in January 1981, January 28th, Reagan was president 7 days, for the nation, a risk of moral amnesia. And he wrote how we'd go down the drain because we'd throw away all the ideas of protecting innocent people or slaves, hungry, oppressed, and so forth, and throw that out the window. Reagan was just president 7 days when that came about. Now, there's a name in the news, or several names in the news this week or currently that go back to the repressions, the assassination teams. One is that Theodore Shackley that I talked about last week and we'll talk about more, who is smoked out or screened out or identified by Seymour Hersh and by Kevin McCullough of the CIA in these current articles in the New York Times. In the New York Times last week, there was a book review, and in the Washington Post, there's a new book called The Third Option, An American Way of Counterinsurgency Operations, written by Theodore Shackley, the same one who was arming Gaddafi to blow up Aramco oil and giving torture weapons to Idi Amin, and arming Carlos the terrorist to do murder all over Western Europe and the Middle East. Shackley is, according to this book review, and it's a current book, was in the CIA 30 years. He was the station chief of South Vietnam. That's what the book review says in the Washington Post. It doesn't say he was station chief of Laos, where he had the opium-growing, killing assassination teams, or that he formed the Nguyen Han Bank of narcotics and assassination teams in Australia. It says he was station chief of South Vietnam. And he claims the United States could have won the war in Vietnam, that it was a righteous war. That's what Reagan keeps saying. And now he surfaces as a possible candidate for the highest office of Reagan's CIA. The Washington Post said Theodore Shackley may surface. Now, it's hard to believe after the exposés that are coming out of Frank Turpel or Kevin McCullough, who's also writing a book, that they couldn't smoke out Theodore Shackley and the links of him and George Bush to assassinations in the United States besides around the world. But this government is so outrageously flagrant that if we don't watch this and write letters to public officials, Shackley may in fact end up on Haig's staff, or he's probably there now. His book is published by McGraw-Hill and Reader's Digest, and for those of you who know those names, you might say, well, what else is new? He wants to be a candidate for high office in Reagan's CIA, and he wants to be an advisor to El Salvador and Angola, and the book review says that he has a blueprint for what should be done. He thinks we need a less fettered CIA. He wants the control he had overseas. He thinks there should be no limits on their actions, that they should get back to the good old days, and we should give counterinsurgency a chance. He wants to direct the policy, if he isn't doing it, in El Salvador, and that's why it's so important to study history, because not only is this dog killing and dealing the drugs and setting up the assassination teams from the day the CIA was formed, involved with the Bay of Pigs and the people that killed John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, the Vietnam policy, the Laotian policy. He was in Chile for the killing of Allende and the destabilization. Now he wants a high-level government job like Vernon Walters to advise us on Angola, which probably includes most of Africa, and El Salvador, which then gets into all of Central America. This is the man, as I say, who wanted to train people. This is a New York Times article. Train people in Libya, and as their general first test, they're testing them out as first graduates, according to the New York Times, June 21st. The first graduates of the terrorist school would demonstrate their skills by blowing up Aramco pipelines in Saudi Arabia. Now, that dog wants to have a high-level job in the CIA and is getting prominent with his book on terrorism and how great the CIA is and how wonderful, what a wonderful job they're doing. If you have any questions about the kind of job he ran in Vietnam, he was over there along with Edwin Wilson, but Theodore Shackley was the big station chief of Vietnam and Laos at a time of torture and sending the heads of state out of Cambodia and then carrying on the Phoenix program. The Phoenix program is the group of agents from the Green Berets and the assassins that went into the Nguyen Han Bank and spread all over the world for future murders. The statistics on the Phoenix program of people being neutralized, killed, jailed, rallied, is very impressive. William Egan Colby of the CIA was the director of the program, and Theodore Shackley was the CIA boss over there. And 70,000 people in Vietnam were neutralized. That's just from 1968 to 71. They called it neutralized. They captured 28,000 and jailed them, and they were in tiger cages and tortured. 17,000 were, they said, rallied, and they didn't define what they did with them. Over 20,000, they admitted they killed, and Shackley was one of the people that tied ropes around their ankles and dangled them from flying airplanes. He wants to be our advisor, according to the current Washington Post in El Salvador. And as I say, if Haig has his way, he's worked with the Special Forces, the Green Berets, and Theodore Shackley from his days over in Taiwan and South Korea and on into Washington, where he took over the White House when Richard Nixon was pushed aside, and he rallied for a few days or weeks as the acting president and wants to do that now. Now, William Colby's plan in Vietnam was so successful that he came home to the United States and became the director of the CIA. He announced at the hearings how many people he killed, so it was a good chance that Theodore Shackley could become an advisor to El Salvador. It's pretty disgusting, but there is a pretty good chance that he could. Another one of his gang, as I say, is this general, Vernon Walters, who's worked closely with him, with Shackley. They worked with the Orlando Letelier murder and Sandra Moffat in Washington, D.C., the murder on Embassy Row. Well, Vernon Walters has advised all our presidents for the past 5 years, and there was an article in the Associated Press. It was carried in all the newspapers June the 5th. General Walters is chosen by Ronald Reagan to be an ambassador at large. The White House had announced that Walters, 64, a retired three-star general and former deputy director of the CIA, played a key role at the outset of the Watergate cover-up, and now that Ronald Reagan is president, he has sent him as an advisor where? El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, down in Central America. The old Bay of Pigs team, the Vietnam team, the people that have stirred so much trouble around the world while they armed Idi Amin and Gaddafi with torture and weapons and assassination weapons to do their killing all over the world. General Walters' name is in the news, Vernon Walters, because he wants a key job. I got out a book. I recently got this book, and as soon as I saw Walters' name, I knew his role with the Letelier story and the Chilean story that involved Shackley, because he was down in Chile at the time Allende was murdered. There's a book, Assassination on Embassy Row, and it tells about Mr. Contreras, who was a high official in the Chilean government who worked on the planning of the murder of Orlando Letelier and Sandra Moffat in Washington. And this book describes Fernandez and Townley, two men involved in these murders, speaking with Contreras, who referred to General Walters as his friend on his visit to Washington in August 1975. That's 1 year before these murders. Walters received him at the CIA headquarters at Langley, Virginia, the intelligence officer's mecca. To Contreras, Vernon Walters was in a league with the other political appointees currently in office under the current director of the CIA, George Bush. Walters was a lifelong soldier on the fighting side against communist subversion. He could sympathize with Contreras' arguments on the use of the disappearance of people and the use of torture in dealing with Chile's suspected communists. Not one that were tried, but suspected. Walters was on their side with George Bush to have people disappear, to have them tortured. They had their people in the White House. This is the end of the first 30 minutes. We'll take a one-minute break and then come back on this list of horror stories of people in Washington today.
This concludes the first half of World Watchers International with Mae Brussel. We will return with the second half after a brief pause.